Accession number 31466.
Mr. Tom Stringer, Reel 6. Now, we're talking about when you've been evacuated by ambulance. So what happened next then?
The ambulance got out of the range of shell fire, and then it stopped. And I remember that there was a nurse on the ambulance, and she came out and put another blanket over me, because it was a bit cold then. So that was all right. And then the ambulance went on to a place called Arce, A-R-C-E, with an accent over the E. That must have been the first base hospital, really. And in this hospital, it was all Germans, and I was the only Britisher. And to me, it was a blow, really, because although I was wounded, one day you're with your friend, your pals, next day you're on your own with German, and you don't speak German. But they were very good to me in this hospital, the German troops. And on my next bed was a Feldwebel. He was a German sergeant, and he was pretty good. And he always, if I wanted any extra, he'd always go in front of the queue where they were with coffee and chocolate and that. And he'd get me, in front.
So how were you feeling at this stage?
I wasn't too good. I wasn't rough. But then I suppose it was better in there than being on Castle Hill, really. But I still was annoyed, really, that I was taken prisoner without any pals, with you. But there it is. Nothing I could do about it.
So you're in this, field hospital. So
yeah, at Arsborough. I think I was there about some. Then the Germans told me there was an English nurse that comes the next day, and she came and she spoke in English. I should have asked her what she was doing in the hospital, but there again, she could have been married to a German before the war, and the profession could have been a nurse, couldn't it? So, but then I was there for about 10 days in this place, Arse.
Now, what other medical treatment did you get there?
I got some dressings, the old dressings taken off and new dressings put on.
Any operations?
No.
So it's basically
they're just taking bits and pieces. And see, when a grenade explodes, it's all in splinters, small piece, and it scatters. And I remember them taking bits out of my leg and arm, bits and pieces. So that's all.
So what next then? You're about 10 days there, still on your own amidst the Germans.
Yeah, and then to another hospital. Where was that? I think it was Florence, the next hospital. That's when I first met any Allied speaking soldiers, really.
So this was a hospital in Florence?
Florence, yeah. And there was Americans as well and British there. So I was pleased to be amongst,
Were you still with Germans as well, or was it this a POW hospital, if you see what I mean?
No, there was no Germans in this hospital. It was all Allied troops at Florence.
And how were you treated there? This would be it'd be just into April, wouldn't it?
April, yeah.
How you treated there?
Not bad, really, yeah. Because they had, we got food and that there. And then the next hospital...
What was the food like in hospital? I mean, was there enough of it?
No, but I was never hungry, really, because I wasn't really well enough to enjoy eating, really. but then after... That hospital, we went to another hospital near Rome, and I wasn't there long, only a few days, and then on to this hospital at Mantova in Italy.
Mantova?
Mantova. It's M-A-N Mantua, but I think on the maps in England it's Mantua, Mantua, but we always call it Mantova. I think it's the same place. So. And this was a vast hospital. One wing was a maternity hospital, and the other wing was all Allied prisoners, American and British.
Now, did you stay at Mantova for a while?
Yes, sir, I think it was there a few weeks.
Now, what was the setup at Mantova then? What was the setup? How did it all work?
At Mantova, it was just one ward. It was manned by Italian nurses who were royalists. They weren't allowed to go out more than 3 miles from the adverse area, but they were pretty good to us. If we wanted anything like cigarettes or that, they would bring it in for us.
Well, whose side were they? They were sympathetic to the Allied side.
Yeah, because they were royalists, yeah. But I was in the next bed to a South African pilot that had been shot down. Martin Marauder, I remember he was always talking about Martin Marauder. He was a Martin Marauder pilot. And I was there till some.
How were your wounds going along?
They were healing, but still I had bandages and that round.
Could you walk yet?
Yeah, with a stick.
So still in a fairly bad way. Yeah. What about your hand? Did you realise your hand was going to be...
No, the hand was the worst because I couldn't... This was still in the plaster and that cast. They put a white cast on it.
Had you realised yet it was going to be a big problem?
For me, yeah. Yes, I did, yeah.
You knew by then?
Yeah.
And how were you feeling? I mean, you know, when you settle down, you're now with Allied.
Allied.
Did that make you feel better, or were you now starting to be depressed?
Yeah, mentally it made me feel better because I could talk to people, yes, as well. And that, they were pretty good, the nurses at Mantova. But then it came to a part where we had to, we were, most of it was healed. I still had bandage on the hand, though. And the leg part was most finished. I had the bandage removed from my chin, so it was only in the hand that was giving trouble.
But so most of the wounds are starting to be better, to heal.
We're healing, yeah. And then we went to a lazaret in Austria, on the train to a lazaret.
There is a lazaret.
That is a prison hospital.
And where's it near?
This was a place called Spittal, Austria.
Spittal. How do you spell
Spittal.
Oh, like it sounds, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, a lazaret.
Lazaret, yes.
Lazaret.
Lazaret.
Oh, I think that just means hospital, I think. I'm not sure about that, but I mean... right, so that's where you went. Yeah. Now, was that part of a prison camp, then?
Yeah, it was.
Do you know which prison camp it was?
I only noticed at Spittal. I can't think the number of it.
Well, we can look it up or whatever. So it's Spittal prison camp. And what was the journey like there? How did you get there?
By train. Yeah, there was German troops on the train as well.
And this will be when? May? Do you know when?
May. Yeah, it must have been early May. Early May it's going to be. And
what was the train journey like? Were you in proper compartments or cattle truck train?
No, it was. We weren't allowed to sit in the... Because there were civilians on the train as well. So we had to stand in the in the corridors of the train.
So what happens next then?
And then when we got to Patel, I had treatment on my hand. And
now, how did they treat your hand?
This was a German, South African medical staff there, and they were pretty good, and the meals were all right there.
But what did they do to your hand? I mean, what could they do?
Well, they could get redressed. And then, when was that Spital? There was a South African surgeon. He was a prisoner, but he was a surgeon. And I was talking to another South African there, and I was telling him that he had the same treatment. He had his hand was wounded on the hand, and he said to me, "Oh, he'll want you because he wants to do a skin graft." He said he's done a skin graft on me, but which was a failure. But he said he'll try you because if he's a skin graft, that's a good thing for a surgeon if he's done that in wartime. So he said he'll try you, and he tried a skin graft on me. That when you have a skin graft, they take a bit from your back, and then because it has to be a fleshy part, and just go and put skin on, it has to be flesh, and then they put it over. Then they wait for a couple of days. And then what happened is he took the dressing as a failure again. So that was that. I think.
Was there anything they could do for it's tendon damage, isn't it? That's done.
It's a tendon, yes.
I mean, it's badly wounded. I mean, whereabout? Could you describe what had happened to your hand? I mean, I know I can see it.
Must have been a small piece of shrapnel. Must have just taught that part there.
It had been on the top of the.
I can't bend the finger.
So it's mainly tendon damage.
Tendon, yeah. Yeah, you can still see the scar there.
Across the back of the hand.
Yeah.
Towards the, yeah. It's the second knuckle, isn't it?
Yeah. It's all right now. It doesn't look. This surgeon, he said, what I can do for you, he said, I can amputate the middle finger and you will have a good grip. But then I thought, amputation, that would look bad when you. Back in England, you know, there's a job and you can't have a job. And it's noticeable, isn't it? But I thought, no, I don't want amputation. So just put up with it. And I thought, oh, in time I might get the grip back, but I never got it back again.
Now, can you describe this lazarette hospital? What was the hospital like?
It wasn't a hospital. It was like a prison camp. But... it wasn't like a stalag. It was better. We had beds in there, which in the stalag you just have mattresses down on the floor.
So was it a prisoner of war hospital? I mean, was that all it was? I was thinking it was a hospital part of a POW camp.
No, it was just for wounded. I always thought a lazarette was like I thought it was a German word for prison hospital.
I think it is.
It is, yeah. But it wasn't a hospital. It was just like a still barbed wire around it.
And it's how many people were in it? How big was it?
I would say there was about 150 there. Yeah.
And how were you treated in there? I mean, it sounds like again they were looking.
Yeah, all Allied staff in there. The medical staff were allowed, you know.
All of them?
Yeah, and they were all prisoners, the staff as well. But after Spital, we got on a train, we went to...
How long were you there for?
I think there was quite a few weeks there. That could have been... Still in May though. Still in May.
So you hadn't had D-Day yet then. May.
No. So then after I was beginning to heal well. Apart from the hand, everything was pretty good really. And then we moved on to 317 in Austria. Stalag 317, which was at a place called Mark. Pongau, yeah. Markt, then Pongau. Pongau. And that to me was the worst part of the prison life there. Worst part, I think that was the worst part since Casino.
Now, why? Tell me your first impressions when you got there. You went by train again, I presume.
But train, yeah. And then when it was one of the Nissan huts, but it was packed. There's so many in there. And it was just, I remember when I first arrived, they put one of these palliasses down, and then they got blankets. And I remember the first night after the lazarette, and the first night I was scratching all the time, these blankets were sort of lousy, really. But they just got it from a warehouse, just bunged them in. So that was the worst. And the food was terrible.
Could you get rid of the lice once you'd got them?
No.
So can you describe the huts a bit more? What were they like then?
Just a Nissen hut.
So how many in there? What's
I think there must have been about 30 or 40 in this Nissen hut. And the food was poor. I mean, all we got was a bowl of skilly. They call it skilly, which was it's hot water with a little bit of potato, if you're lucky, and mangelwurzel. And it was, if you're lucky, you might get a bit of horse meat in as well. But that was the only meal that you got during the day, and you look forward to that. But
You only got one meal a day.
One meal a day, yeah. But then every 3 weeks, we got potatoes. I've already been cooked, but then I think we had worked out about three a person. And I mean, these potatoes were lined up on the table to make certain that one size potato wasn't bigger than the other. So it had to I think it's poor because Red Cross parcels, they say they couldn't get them through. And they did for a time. When I first went there, we did get Red Cross parcels.
And people don't know now, what was a Red Cross parcel? What was in it? How was it issued?
It contained a bit of margarine, a little margarine, and a little bit of bully. And I think you could survive a week if you had the parcel yourself, but after a time it was shared between two, and you were losing weight, really. It wasn't enough food, really, to keep you going, really. I was losing weight all the time. I think they all were.
Now, so what would you do all day? I mean, take me through a typical day at 307.
It was very monotonous. You could walk round outside, just round the, and we tried to try and keep as fit as possible by us walking, and used to see one or two chaps that you knew in there, or you met in there, became friendly with. And then they had a little library, and which was about 20 books in it for all the lot. And you had to, once somebody had read a book, you'd pass it on. And I remember reading a book called Payment Deferred. And I got into it. But after a time, with the cold and there's no heating and lack of food, the book didn't make any sense to me. I couldn't actually read, really. So that was a bit bad part, I think, starting 317.
Was there a morning roll call and things like that?
Yes, there was.
Tell me about that. What was that like?
They called it a PEL, they called it. And you were called out, and then you had to go out quickly, and then they'd line you up. But if you were late in coming out, they'd move you to a side and make you keep out there longer because it was cold when you called out. And I remember coming out late and I drifted onto the main part, which was in, and this German in charge there, he got me back, he saw me coming and got me back to That meant another half an hour out in the car. But I hated that place, that 317.
What were the guards like? They were German, were they, or Austrian, or we can't tell the difference.
Mostly Austrian.
And how did they treat you? What did you think of the guards?
I don't think they bothered us much, the guards. All they had was the watchtower, you know, with the machine guns there, so that you didn't escape there. And you really saw the guards at all. But what was pretty good there at this 317, there was two chaps who were like senior NCOs.
British,
yeah. And they somehow got hold of a radio. Whether they traded things that they had to get German parts, but they, I know at night we were calling about 9 o'clock to a room, and somebody keeping watch outside so no guards came in the hall. And because wireless is not allowed in the camp. And then we actually knew the BBC news. We knew when D-Day came, and
you were in there during D-Day, were you?
Yeah.
And they didn't find out about the wireless, the guards.
They knew there was a wireless in because I kept coming searches each day, but they never found it. And now these two chaps.
Did you know where it was hidden?
No, I didn't know. The only two people that knew were the two chaps that gave us the reading each night.
What sort of organisation did the British have? Because often the camps are quite well organised with a senior British NCO. Did you have that there?
Yeah, we had a senior chap.
What was his role? Do you remember who it was?
I can't remember his name, but he was a camp leader, really. I think he must have been an RSM in one of the Durham Light Infantry, something like that. I can't remember his name, though.
Was he any good? Because some of them were good.
Yeah, he was pretty.
And some of them weren't.
No, he was pretty good, yeah. He'd done what he had to do. And he said that. He told us when. What happened one day was towards the end, the German guards left the camp.
So you were quite. I mean, he represented you to the Germans, did he then?
Yeah.
Could he speak German, or did they speak English to him? Or do you not know?
I don't really know if he spoke German or not. No.
Was there any other organisation in the camp?
Yeah, there was another two. I think it was these two chaps who had the wireless. They were NCOs, senior NCOs. And they were next to him in the organisation. They were pretty good because to get a radio going there.
Did they maintain discipline amongst you? Because, did you feel under discipline? I mean,
I think everybody had to be self-disciplined, really.
Now, what about an escape committee? Was there an escape committee? Or was it? Sometimes there is and sometimes there isn't.
Not this camp. There wasn't. I think.
Was escape seen as a possibility?
Well, one or two tried it, but don't forget you've got the Alps. The other side of the camp is the Alps. If you escape, where would you get to? You'd cross the Alps. But then I think there were one or two attempts, but they were very poor because.
What do you remember of them? How did they try and get out?
First of all, there's two tried it who never spoke a word of German, and I think they got about one day they lasted, and they were brought back again. That's the only escape I know at that camp.
How did they get out? Do you know?
The wire, cutting the wire. So yeah, how they got hold of the appliance to cut the wire, I don't know.
Now, can I talk a bit more about trying to keep fit? So you walked around the camp. Was there anything else to keep fit? Games or football or anything like that?
No. There was a Spittal, that's the lazarette. I didn't mention that. Yeah, there's a little park where they used to play football, and the Russians were there as well. And they used to play the British and played against the Russians. That's the first time I knew the Russians were good at football. That's at Spittal.
But not at.
Not at 317, no.
Is it 307 or 317?
317.
Right. Now, what about the latrines? Sorry, I just picking up various points.
Yeah, 317, you had to go outside, and it's just the old pole across, you know. But then.
What state were they in? I mean, were they well maintained? You know the difference in a well maintained.
Not really.
Any washing facilities? Or showers?
No. One day, I think the only time I remember getting a shower was there was a place, but it was under German control. It wasn't in the prison camp. But they had hot water. And we got a shower, but that's the only time I remember as a prisoner that I got a shower. So I must have gone months.
Well, was there any disease in the camp? I mean, you know, dysentery or malnutrition or just general, I mean, because, you know.
Yeah, we had one or two deaths there.
What from?
I think mostly from started with stomach trouble. But.
What was the overall state of health, would you say? I mean, were people just losing weight, or were there other diseases coming in, like dysentery?
No, it's mainly losing weight, and unless you had something wrong with you, like some stomach trouble, and then lack of food would make that worse.
And how were you in yourself? I mean, because you'd been badly wounded, I mean, and you still got a crocked hand. How were you in yourself?
Well, I always try to keep as fit as possible, even under the conditions. But then lack of food pulled you down a bit.
Was there any work parties? Because the Germans usually fixed up work parties for people who weren't NCOs.
No, they did try it. They tried to work. I remember them saying that there was. They called out on a roll call when certain numbers. You had to remember your number, and I could never remember my prison number. You had to go forward. Your number was called out, you went in the front rank. They called all these numbers out, and then that was that. And then the German commander went to the British officer, and he said something to him. And the British officer came into the group that went forward. They said, somebody's hasn't come forward, and he called out the number. I looked at my tag; it was my number. But I wasn't going to go forward anyway. And I said, "I'm still having treatment in my hand." I said, "I'm on repat, and I shouldn't go. I'm not going on any working party." I said, "You as a British officer should see it." And he went up to the German commandant and said to him. Then I had to go before the next day to the German doctor. And he looked at my playbook and he said, "You're born in Hackney." He said, "I was a doctor in Hackney, the German hospital." I said, "Yes, I've been in the German hospital for measles." So I was still on the repat and I didn't go on this working party.